I would like to introduce our first speaker, and it is Joseph B. Mauhau, Denver, Colorado. And his the topic is being ourselves.
Got everything set? Okay. Good morning. My name is Joseph. I'm an addict. And I'm from the Mile High area, which is in the Colorado region. Mile High is most of the Denver metro area. My home group is This Ain't Therapy. We meet 5 days a week at noon, downtown Denver. My clean date is 7/26/88, so I'm pushing 25 years now in this program. And you're not going to hear much about anything other than what Narcotics Anonymous has to offer, because I don't know anything else. I've never been anywhere. I came into a meeting in utter desperation, hallucinating, and I heard somebody say, keep coming back. And as a matter of fact, at that time I had done a geographic, and what they were saying in Boston back in the day is, no matter whether your ass falls off, put it in the basket and bring it back to a meeting. And you know, I suffered through the same thing that a lot of newcomers suffer through, and so it took me about 7 months to get 30 days, and I haven't looked back. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at as an individual. I'll be 63 years old this summer. I have a couple kids, and they may come up in what I have to share now. So I guess I qualify, like, you know, some of us here may have used some, because I've come to an understanding of this program that not necessarily your experience of the guy sitting next to me is the same. And so our program and what I've learned from you guys has helped me eliminate the reservations I have about people in the rooms, you know. So if you've ever been so high, in fact, I was so high one time, I walked to the edge of the street and looked down at the curb. I realized that was too far for me to step. So I sat down, put my feet in the street, and then stood up. And, you know, I'm from that generation of better living through chemistry. And so, you know, I was really, really fortunate. I had a warm and loving family, two parents most of my life, went straight through school. Oh yeah, by the way, I went on a special program. I had, like, something in my front pocket, something in my back, and something just across the street. And I don't know how I managed to do that, but I managed. So I was so crazy when I got out of school that I basically put all my stuff in a backpack and got my dog, and we started hitchhiking. That's the best that I could do. That's the best I got to do at that point. And so I want to tell you that Denver is my home, and my family, like a lot of families from the South, migrated north and west, etc. And somewhere in the middle 50s is when I hit Colorado. And where I came from, there were only three kinds of people: Black, white, and Chinese. So as far as any other kind of person, that was totally foreign to me. Of course, I'd seen cowboys and Indians on TV, but I had never met a live one. I knew what a mule was, but we didn't have horses. So, you know, I came up in something that was totally and completely foreign to me, you know. So sometimes I feel a little bit different. I see the brothers here from Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania and New York and all that. You know, you got all that kind of stuff going. Well, that's not me. You know, I don't have any gang affiliations. I don't have any tattoos. I don't have any gunshot wounds. I don't have any stab wounds. I don't have any street name, nicknames. I have no convictions. Okay? Okay? But never will. And the reason that I'm here is because I suffer from the disease of addiction. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that insanity. You know, because the biggest dope dealer I know is right here in between my ears. I don't have to go get it. I already got it. And finding some comfortability in my life is what Narcotics Anonymous has provided for me. Finding some comfortability. I had an auntie, and she was probably born in, I would say she was probably born in the 1880s. And one of the things that when I was a little boy and she was taking care of me in Alabama, and I would start doing that crazy stuff, you know, she would say to me, "Be yourself." Now, I don't know if anybody ever heard that, but the reality of my life is that at the age of 3 and 4, I had people in authority, adult people, saying to me, "Be yourself." And that noise was still going into my head, and I was still doing what I wanted to do. I didn't really understand what they were talking about. Didn't really understand. The process of these steps in this program brought me to a place where not only I was able to identify defects in my character, in my thinking, in my actions, but I was really able to capture the assets that I had. And it's really important for those that are doing the step work, because it was very important for me to move forward with a positive sense of self. And it refers to that in our literature in the basic text. It talks about, you know, losing that negative sense of self and developing a positive concern for others. That's something I never had. See, my, you know, from as long as I can remember, you know, I qualified that for this program long before any type of substance, okay? Because coming up, my deal was, you're first after me. You first after me. I'll divide. I'll share whatever I have with you. But I get to do the dividing. And it was a constant, you know, it was a constant thing that I was consumed with getting things and holding on to things for myself. And as a youngster, you know, I went through life devising more refined systems of getting from you exactly what I wanted, and you getting a sense that you were getting something in return. Just a sense. You wasn't getting nothing. Just a sense, just that sense. And just refining that and reworking with it. See, because we talk about, you know, we talk about the opposite of being humble in this program. So like maybe some of you, I went through a lot of humiliation, because when that didn't work, it was humiliation is what I got, right? A very uncomfortable feeling, embarrassment, a whole lot of guilt. I got caught. You know, it had nothing to do with what I did. I got caught, you know, and me functioning as the power in my life, your life too, by the way, then I had to go back to the drawing board and devise a new scheme, you know. I can remember being in kindergarten, And most people here have gone to kindergarten. Some may have not, but your children have. And they have something called show and tell. And in show and tell, you get to bring an object, a bug, or whatever. And all the kids stand, at least the way it happened in my kindergarten, all the kids stand around, and then you pass it around, you look at it, and you talk about it, and whatever. So this kid, he brought his grandfather's pocket watch. Okay, so there's 12 of us in kindergarten. The watch goes around the circle and stops in my pocket. Where'd that come from? Where'd that come from? You know? 1956, 57, there was no crack. Right? Didn't come from that. Where'd that come from? And those same feelings that I experienced getting busted, doing something impulsively with no plan. No plan. The watch was in this room 2 minutes ago. Nobody has left the room. Who has the watch? I'm not giving it up. So after being frisked, after being frisked, I had the standard answer that I used all the way up until you guys told me I was responsible for my recovery. And my answer was, I don't know. I don't know. You know, self-obsession is a cold-blooded thing. It's a cold-blooded thing. So, you know, what I learned and what people gave me the opportunity to learn is that my disease encompasses a heck of a lot more than any particular substance, period. And in our basic text, that is expanded into every area of my life. See, I've been clean long enough to have bounced around in a lot of those areas. We don't want to really even get into that. I've been clean long enough to have a history in Narcotics Anonymous. Right? I've been clean long enough so that my first sponsee at 21 years clean died suddenly. I've been clean long enough that there was a person sitting next to me in a meeting that seemed to be okay, that left the meeting and went home and committed suicide. I've been clean a long time. I've seen a lot of stuff, you know? Not only outside, you know, our recovery comes from outside and within. And so being responsible for my recovery gave me a gateway into some humility and an exit, slowly over a period of time, an exit from a totally self-obsessed person. You know? That's my deal. That's why I keep coming. Because I'm not trying to present myself as a dude that's sitting up here flowing and glowing. That's not the case. But what I'm saying to you is, you know what? I'm not like the cat that's the Hug Squad cat. But I'm a guy that you can sit down and talk with and get to know. You know what I'm saying? I'm not the antagonist that I was. I ain't no pacifist. Okay? But I'm not the antagonist, you know? I'm a guy that has learned to be consistent in what I believe until further information is provided, and I can change with that, you know? That thing we talk about, open-mindedness, you know? little bit open-minded. And, you know, I'm not like a terribly friendly guy, you know? And I think I mentioned that. You know, I'm not outgoing, you know. I don't have that thing with that twist alignment so that, you know, I start raising the roof. You know what I'm saying? That's just not me. You know, and I'm okay with that. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. That's cool. I know that. And that doesn't bother me anymore. I have a friend that he likes to put it like this. He says, I was spending money I didn't have on things I didn't need for people I didn't like. You know? Yeah, going places I didn't want to go. You know, and I'm getting really, really close in the inventory that I'm beginning to believe, honestly, that I used against my will the first time. The first time. There was nothing in my life. There was nothing in my dreams. There was nothing in my values. There was nothing in my pursuit of things that would give anyone the indication that I would be standing on a corner with a pocket full of whatever trying to make a living. There was nothing there. You know, and it's important for me to say that because a lot of times when I come to meetings and workshops and hear speakers, it's all about, you know, it's all about the environment and the role models and cats on the corner and the attraction of the bright lights and the jewelry, you know, the money, property, prestige. I can't find that. I knew when I was 16 years old, I knew that narcotics was a chemical straitjacket being pushed into my community to keep people under control. I knew that. And I could explain that to you. I had some facts around that. You know? But at age 19, I was taking LSD 25, and I thought it was the greatest thing on earth. What happened to that kid? You know? And what I'm saying is that this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. I'm standing here as a representative. The disease doesn't give a damn. You know, you hear all this stuff, and sometimes I hear this moralizing and all this kind of stuff about this dude has got this and he's got that and so much money, this and all that. Man, come on, we've all heard it. Fits comfortably in a pipe or a syringe or a pill or a bottle. All that stuff. But what's so cold to me is I understand more than ever today that it is in my thinking. It is in my thinking, and I need a lot of help because I listen to you guys and I pay attention at meetings, and you give me a whole lot of good suggestions that I can try on an experimental basis in my life to keep my dumb ass from going back to where I came from. You know, I fell for it once. Hook, line, and sinker. Fell for it once. You know, I had a whole retirement program set in narcotics. I see some heads moving. You know, that whole retirement thing, like, I'm rocking in a chair, I got, you know, I'm puffing, I got, you know, strippers in the back room, and they all calling me daddy, and I'm throwing money out of both pockets, and you know what I'm saying? I'm driving an old truck so I can stay on the low, right? Come on now. I didn't see that movie. I made that shit up. I made that up, you know? So, you know, I have a responsibility in my community that I accept today, you know? And it's not so much that I'm overwhelmed about what people think about me. Yeah, I want you to think well of me. I do. I really do. And I want people to respect me on some level and admire me and all like that. But it's what I think about me that counts. One more time, I get to be first. One more time, I get to be first. What do I think about myself? You know? And so what that's what the program has provided me, and it's provided me a pretty smooth ride. Once that I did that thing that you guys told me about, that I have a chance to ask you to help me and let you know what I want you to do about my problem. About my problem. You know, that's important. You know, I don't give advice. I give experience. You know, I give experience. And hope. And hope. And I don't mind saying, hey, I hope that you don't make a bad decision around that. You know, I hope through some prayer meditation that, you know, because I got two adult children. I hit on them right quick because it's important for you to know this. You know, I was a person in this in recovery that was a dad raising two girls. You know? And I raised those girls, and those girls are in the world and doing their thing. They ain't got like no nothing. They don't, you know, they don't even toast on New Year's. You know what I'm saying? My youngest daughter's obsession is in school, you know, and it has driven her to a place in life that, you know, I will, and I'll tell you a funny story. She's going to make her first full-length movie. They're going on location in May, right? So we're on the phone. I'm talking to my two daughters, and I'm saying, well, you know, I'm going to be there. I'm going to bring my director's chair. You don't have to have a chair for me because I'm going to bring my own chair. I'll just sit down. I'll have my umbrella. All I need is cool drinks. I said, but if you need somebody, like, to walk through or be, you know, be one of the extras, you know, I could do that too. My oldest daughter said, no, Dad, no. You can't do that. Because I know you, the camera will pan by and you're going to wink. You're going to do something. And they're going to have to go back and shoot this movie again because you just can't sit there and not do anything. I said, that's cold. That's cold. I said, but you know, hey, when I wonder about how good I'm doing in my recovery and what kind of person I am and what people think about me, all I got to do is look to the people that are closest to me, people in my family. They'll let me know. They'll let me know directly or indirectly. So this is a wonderful life in recovery. This is a very wonderful life, and I hope that everyone here makes it back to Ocean City again clean next year, or makes it to tomorrow clean, or makes it to tonight clean, and attend some of the workshops and pick up something that me, my first sponsor told me, said, boy, your responsibility is go to a meeting, sit and listen, and get one thing from that meeting that may save your life. I've been doing that a long time, and I haven't been to a meeting in recovery that I haven't been able to find one thing that came from one of you guys that I could use, maybe not today, but at some point, that may save my life. So I appreciate your attention, and my name is Joseph. I'm an addict. That's all I got.
I'd like to thank Joseph for meeting. The second speaker at this time I'll introduce is